Amy, on this podcast, we try to always offer useful takeaways. And if you learn nothing else from us, learn this useful parenting lesson by Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 are the ultimate parent hack, the best diaper to use as soon as your baby starts standing or walking. Instead of ordinary diaper tabs, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your wild child.
Pampers Cruisers 360 makes it so easy to change your baby. Who probably doesn't stop moving just because they need a diaper changed? Just slide on to apply and away they go.
And fear not, parents. Pampers Cruisers 360 offers an up to 100% leak-free fit. And they just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we say more?
For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand. Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupons, savings, and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
I never told.
What fresh hell?
Laughing in the face of motherhood. What happened? Nothing. Fine, nothing. With Margaret Apples
and Amy Wilson.
News report from the fourth grade classroom.
A podcast that solves today's parenting dilemmas
so you don't have to.
What?
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood. This is Amy.
And this is Margaret. And today we are talking about when should kids tell? I suggested this episode after having a conversation with Christy, my famous on the podcast sister-in-law, who I talk all parenting things through with. I will say before we start, as sort of obvious by our topic, this is going to go down a couple of, like, you know, darker avenues perhaps, because we're talking about kids and the kind of things they need to talk to you and tell you about. And we're not talking about the fun things. Like, should they tell you all about the magical wishing stone? Like, that's not this episode. This is a little bit more.
Oh, God, I'm glad we're not going to go back to the wishing stone. I mean,
this is a little bit more about should they tell you about some bad things that might be happening in their lives. So if you don't want us having that conversation around your children, this might be a good episode for them to skip. Okay, so this came up. I can't remember what episode, Amy, we were talking about it on, but I had an incident with my daughter who was somewhere and saw something kind of funky. And she came home and I said, how was it? And she's like, I'm not sure I should tell you.
Right.
That was her reaction.
And the idea that that would be her first reaction
shocked me.
I saw something bad. I'm not sure I should tell you, Mom.
Right. Like, something. Of course you tell me. I'm going to make up this example, which is not at all what happened and has never happened to me. But let's imagine that she went over to a play date with some friends, a group of friends, and she saw the mom drinking a tremendous amount of alcohol by herself while watching the kids. Let's give that as an example of what happened, although it is not what happened.
Okay.
And she did say to me, she's like, there was something weird that happened, but I'm not sure I should tell you. She knew enough to know it was kind of funky what was going on, somehow kind of secret and wrong. And then she knew enough to be like, I'm not supposed to tell other people's secrets. And she somehow knew this thing was a secret. And so it kind of was like a splash of cold water in my face of like, what is this? Like, and by the way, my daughter is 7, so we're talking about a little kid. And it made me really interested in this topic. And then at some point, Christy, my sister-in-law, who I talk about a lot, who runs a school in Chicago, she said to me, I would love it on the podcast if you would talk about this issue of when should kids tell. It's something we talk about a lot as administrators at the school. And it's a stickier wicket than you might think.
All right. I'm looking forward to this because I had a similar situation with a much older child saying that he wasn't going to tell me. I found out about something that was happening that didn't include him but could have. And he was, you know, he didn't tell me. And I believe that he should have told me. And my spouse actually disagreed. So we'll talk about that. That's an older kid thing.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. So let's start at the beginning. So when we have little kids and my daughter, who would not tell me about this situation. Although, to be fair, she did say, I'm not sure I should tell you. And then, of course, I immediately got the information out of her. So, like, it wasn't exactly that she didn't tell me.
Because you were like, yeah, that means you must.
But that she had some instinct not to tell me was concerning, I thought. So, but she is also a fantastically huge tattletale, which is a funny dynamic, right? So I was like, let's start our conversation, because I do think this is an ages and stages thing, with like the idea of tattling versus telling.
Tattling, it's a weird thing because we use this word that's completely pejorative with kids. Like, are you tattling? But we don't.
Right.
We don't explain it to ourselves, let alone to them, what that even means, right?
We say it all the time. We're like, don't be a little tattlebutt, you know?
Yeah.
Because my daughter is a fantastic tattletale. And in some ways, we have a joke always, like the friend group, that like as long as there's an older girl in the yard, you can let the kids do anything, because the older girl will come running in and be like, da, 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 da. My brother-in-law's family tells a story that like his sister was like the knowledge police basically at their house, and that the parents would always come driving home, and if something bad had happened, she would be standing out at their mailbox with her arms crossed, like ready to give them the full report on the crimes.
Oh boy.
So yeah, we don't actually want tattling. Tattling is bad.
Well, what's the difference? Let's talk about the difference. Yeah.
Okay, so tattling, getting someone in trouble. Telling, getting someone out of trouble.
Okay. I mean, like getting someone out of trouble if they're being bullied, but you are getting the bully in trouble.
Yeah, but the bully should be in trouble. Like,
yeah.
It's
you're getting someone else out of trouble.
Getting someone out of a bad situation is telling. Getting someone in trouble is tattling. I feel like that's pretty clear to me when I think about this idea. This is from like a mimeographed handout that I found on teacherspayteachers.com, by the way. Like, it's like, these apparently are things that like hang in like kindergarten classroom walls.
And that tattling is unimportant and telling is important. But again, that's a little hard for a six-year-old to be like, yeah, but he was pulling her hair. That is terribly important in my first grade sense of justice.
Yes, exactly. Well, let's go through the list and then we'll talk a little bit about the background. Tattling is harmless. Telling is harmful or dangerous. So the action right. that the person is doing. So like they're touching the glue with their hand. It's harmless. They're using drugs behind the bleachers. It's harmful or dangerous. So there's a distinction. Tattling is an accident, like someone bumped me in the hallway. Telling is being mean on purpose.
About somebody who's being mean on purpose.
Yes, about someone who's being mean. This is like going back to the bullying thing. Like, it's not bullying if someone's like, you're dumb. That's not bullying. That's just someone saying something mean. But like a campaign of terror against you is bullying. And like, that's sort of a difference between like, he touched me in line. That's tattling. He is constantly shoving people every time the teacher's back is turned. That's telling.
Do you think that we should maybe not tell kids not to tattle? Like, I feel like that word should kind of be retired. If we do want our kids to tell us important stuff, we should stop casting in a negative light. Like, you shouldn't be telling me that. And there's a, you know, there's a special negative word I'm going to use about you for telling stuff. I don't really get why we need to tell kids to stop tattling, other than that it annoys us.
Amy, you are in agreement with many people on the internet who have written "Let's Stop Tattling" articles, but I'm going to counter argue.
Okay.
Tattling is also bad and a problem, and it needs to be disciplined.
When is tattling a problem?
Tattling is a problem because basically, developmentally, kids are very into rules, which is good. As young kids, they don't sort of see the spectrum of behavior. They're like black and white, this is good and this is bad. But then certain kids, as a part of showing off how great they are at understanding the rules, take it upon themselves to administer the rules to someone else. So I constantly find myself saying in my house, who's the mom in this household? Is it you? No, it's me. It's important that your kids don't become kids who are in everyone else's business, minding everyone else's business but their own. That's a thing.
Yeah, those kids are a real pain in the rear. And I mean, I've been that kid.
You, Amy, I can kind of see that. I can see you being a little tattlebutt. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was the oldest. I was oldest kid, the smarty pants in the classroom. I was the oldest grandchild.
Yeah, you're kind of an A student. Like, I've got this.
I was the Tracy Flick of any group in which I found myself.
Tracy Flick is an Oldilocks alert.
Back in my day.
But the movie Election is fantastic if you haven't seen it. And Tracy Flick is exactly the kid we're talking about. You don't want your kid to turn out to be Tracy Flick.
You don't want your kid to turn out like Tracy Flick. But I wonder if the world sands the edges off. Like, I had a kid who was a justice warrior when they were little and were quick to tell me what everybody was doing. And that went away. And I think it is something that's, it's an annoying behavior. But does sort of socialization sand those edges off eventually anyway without us?
It probably does. But I think through use of the word tattle. But Amy, I am going to quote from you a greatschools.org article.
Okay.
Because it features something that you love, which is a rhyming rule.
Oh.
So this article says, if the end game for parents is making sure our kids feel that we are safe and available harbors for all kinds of information, then maybe it's time to simply erase the word tattle from our vocabularies.
Yeah,
we can replace it with something a bit more dull, but perhaps ultimately more helpful for keeping the lines of honest communication open, like having conversations about concerns or using a catchy phrase like, don't squeal unless it's a big deal.
I think that we should all, as a people, replace the word tattle, which is, we've just had to spend 10 minutes figuring out what it means exactly, and we should only heretofore say, don't squeal unless it's a big deal.
I mean, I could not disagree with you more, but I like that you have that point of view. I think tattling is a different thing than telling, and that it's better.
Well, no, it is. But why not tell the kid who came in and said, like, she drank too much water at the water fountain. Why not say back, don't squeal unless it's a big deal, instead of stop being a tattletale? That's all I'm saying. Not that tattling should be allowed in all circumstances. Use the right words.
I mean, I don't know. Is this just your absolute love of a rhyming phrase? Do we need to eradicate tattling completely from the vocabulary? I think it is very, very important to make a distinction for kids between being policeman, that is not your role, and just kind of saying, like, why are you involved in this? Why are you minding this person's business? Mind your own business. I find myself using these phrases all the time when you're dealing with siblings and stuff. And then making a distinction between, like, I want you to come to me if someone is doing harm to themselves or other people, but you should not be the policeman of the playground and minding other people's business.
But also, like, to use another rhyming phrase, when we just hear, like, cinches get stitches.
Yes.
Telling's bad. You know, like, if we're telling our kids that and then we're aghast that they're not telling us something that we really needed to have heard, then maybe we're messaging wrong and we need to.
Yeah. I mean, this is the crux of the sticky wicket that, like, but I think the solution kind of lies more in making a distinction with them in terms of what kind of stuff, because there's also a gossip element in this, which I think is part of what I think that's key to what stopped my daughter. That I have a zero tolerance policy for gossip. Like, you know what this person did, and it was really dumb. I'm like, no, we don't talk cruelly about other people. But then that's another distinction that needs to be made. Like, you're not gossiping about somebody if you come to me and you say, my friend is scared because her mom drinks in the car. You know, that's not gossip. That's something that, like, that's too big a problem for you as a kid, and you need to loop an adult into that.
Amy Morin wrote an article for Very Well Family, and she comes in on the side of don't tell kids to keep secrets. But then when you actually read the article, it's not secrets are bad. It's here's good secrets, here's bad secrets. But she talks a lot about how you have to teach your kids a little bit about family privacy, that that your brother's failing math is really not something for public broadcast.
Right.
You know, it's something that's happening to somebody else. That's not something you need to tell people. Because it would hurt their feelings. I don't know. It gets into that. But I do think there have to be sort of, I mean, even we're having a hard time being like, well, this is okay, but this isn't. Can I tell you that the story of the example of my older kid? Because this really sort of brought this into focus for me that I wasn't sure I had the right answer. Okay. So this was my child was in middle school, and some of the kids in my child's grade were juuling, you know, using the e-cigarettes.
Yeah.
In one of the lavatories during breaks between classes. And there were odorless. So there was no way to detect this. And I guess it went on for a while. And I guess it only became apparent once half of the kids that were the same gender as my child were mysteriously 10, 11, 12 minutes late for a math class.
So it was a big group of kids.
It was, let's say it was, well, these are small class sizes, but let's say, yeah, it was 6 or 7 kids were in the lavatory, like on school grounds, using Juul in between classes before it was discovered. And okay. Of course, it eventually gets discovered and, you know, the hammer comes down. These are little kids, so nobody was expelled, but there was some very serious conversations had about these things. Talked to my kid about it, because I was sort of properly horrified that kids this young were doing this. And turned out my kid knew all about it and had for most of the time that it was happening, because, of course, all the kids knew about it. And I said, well, why didn't you tell? Why didn't you tell somebody that it was happening? And he was sort of like, I'm not going to do that. And I said, well, you have to. It's important. And my spouse came down on the side of, that's not our kid's job to tell on these other kids and get them in trouble. I'm like, right, but there were little kids who were doing something. And now, since this whole thing has happened, it's become more clear that, like, Juuling is immediately and obviously horrible, and we need to our kids to not be doing it, and it's very addictive. This was a sort of dawning of the age of Juul. But I wasn't clear in the end, like, oh, I see. That my spouse's point of view was, our kid doesn't need to mortgage his good standing with his peers and have everybody know that they're the one who told in order to do something that's not that my child's responsibility to do.
Amy, I'm going to react to your story right after the break.
Margaret, exciting news. I am about to have a new baby nephew. And believe it or not, this will be my 13th nephew.
Amy, you're ready to give up your amateur status. You're a pro aunt at this point.
Our family has seen a lot of babies. And as soon as they start standing or walking, I send them all a whole lot of Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 don't have ordinary diaper tabs. Instead, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your newly mobile little one.
Pampers Cruisers 360 offer a gap-free fit that is up to 100% leak-proof, crucial once your baby is quite literally up and at 'em. And that gap-free fit helps prevent your baby from taking off their diaper, a habit you do not want them to get into.
You can say that again. And Pampers Cruisers 360 just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we even elaborate on the need for that, friends? For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
More and more, you hear about the importance of electrolytes as part of staying hydrated, because you need the sodium and the potassium, not just the water. And whether you're looking to hydrate during a workout, while traveling, or at the end of a long night, Sports Research Hydrate Electrolytes have got you covered with over 65 trace minerals, 7 essential vitamins, and coconut water powder.
Crisp and refreshing and without any sugar, this is hydration powered by Sports Research. They're little packets you can just grab and take with you to mix into your water bottle on the go. My favorite flavor so far, Amy, gotta be the cherry pomegranate.
Interesting. My high schooler likes the lemon lime, and she keeps a few handy in her backpack for days that she has practice after school. These electrolytes have the sodium and the potassium that you need to go with it in the optimal ratio for daily hydration.
Visit sportsresearch.com and use code WHATFRESH at checkout for 50% off your purchase of Hydrate.
That's Sports Research, SportsResearch, sportsresearch.com, and use code WHATFRESH for 50% off your Hydrate electrolytes order.
Okay, we're back. I think that the story of young kids using e-cigarettes secretly is exactly in the strike zone of this dilemma, right?
Mm-hmm.
That, like, I feel like we all understand that. So I talked a lot to my sister-in-law about this. She's a mandated reporter. So if you don't know what that means, it's like if someone comes to you with information that there's abuse going on, she is legally obligated to report that to the authorities. So this is something that became, I don't know when this came into practice, but like maybe a decade ago, the idea that like we're going to make it a law that if someone comes to you, you have to report, because we don't want people to have to make this decision about like, wait, is this something I should go to the police about? It takes you out of the situation. I work in a couple of situations where I am a mandated reporter, and I have had conversations with people because it makes my job easier. People come to me and they're like, can I tell you something? And I'm like, you can, but before you do, please understand that I am a mandated reporter, and anything you say to me, if it is a crime, I will be going to the authorities with that crime, because that is my job as a mandated reporter. It kind of takes the onus off of you, right? Like, wait, what if your son had come to tell you kids were jeweling? Like, you would have gone to the school, right? And then it's like, it's a sticky situation. Then your kid is kind of the narc, you know, and it's difficult for everybody. The other thing they have in Illinois, where my sister's school is they have mandated education about childhood sexual abuse. So like, this is another thing that people have started to figure out, that like giving kids information up front makes reporting much, much easier. So this is only in 20 states in the United States, but they have to present a curriculum at her school every single year about sexual abuse.
To the kids or to the teachers?
To the kids.
Yeah, that's, I think that's important. Yeah.
And I think to me that unlocked something in it, because what you said is really interesting. Now we understand that juuling and e-cigarettes is in the drug category, basically.
Right.
Like, that is something that you have to report. And it, but probably as it started to come up, it's like, well, this seems sort of harmless. I actually have to say, like, because of my kids' ages, I know nothing about juuling. I should probably figure it out soon, but like,
we'll do an episode.
But like, what is that? Like, it seems, I mean, I've seen people do it and it's like, wait, what are you doing? It looks like you're like sucking on an iPhone. Like, mm-hmm. It doesn't really, I think, mentally register. So I think part of what's important about this topic is like making sure that your kids have the power of information before they are confronted with things, so that they kind of understand what these things are when they come up. I'm so glad that this topic came up, because I feel like this is something that I hadn't thought through, and it's really important to think through. So Lucy Henman, author of Parenting a Teen Girl, says part of healthy development is turning to peers as a source of contact and connection. That means that teens want to know whether their outfit looks cool, social snubs, they're going to talk to a friend. A lot of kids think, I'm not going to bring things up with my parents because I'm going to be judged or hear a lecture. They can be more open with their friends. In fact, that is developmentally appropriate, and you want to foster that. But you want them to be prepared if they hear stuff during conversations that is over their head, that they're not ready for.
We don't want to be the ones to tell them the things that we think that they're not ready for, but they're hearing it. We have to deal with our discomfort. To quote your sister-in-law, Christy says, adults consistently underestimate what kids already know and what information they're sharing with each other.
This is so important. And this is the thing of like the sex talk. Like, when are you going to have the sex talk? I guarantee you're having it 2 years too late.
Yep.
I mean, I have 10, 9, and 7, and they're already talking about it with each other and getting their information from each other. And so you have to be part of that conversation in some fundamental way, because you are never going to stop the part of the conversation where like they know about things that are going on. I knew about things in seventh and eighth grade that would have shocked my parents. You know, I mean, there were kids in my seventh grade class who are sexually active, and like it was being discussed pretty much constantly in my seventh grade classroom. I was whatever. What are you in seventh grade? 12, 11, you know,
12, 13.
And
yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that my parents would have been shocked and appalled to learn what was being done and then discussed in those classrooms.
And it doesn't mean it's not happening.
And I sure wasn't coming home at night and being like, hey, let me tell you about what's going on at school.
So is part of the problem with older kids that, like, I wonder if my child didn't want to disclose to me that kids were juuling because my child couldn't be sure of my reaction?
For sure.
That I wouldn't be like, what? They want to protect us, I think, from what they think we don't know. And there's a lot we don't know. I mean, there's my kids and their friends are doing things that I catch glimpses of on social media that would curl your hair. And when I ask about it, when I press, it's like, yeah, yeah. Like, Mom, that's out there. Yeah, yeah. They're playing it cool, but they're still sort of looking at me sideways, sort of like, how's she handling this?
I wrote an essay a long time ago, but it was about the way that my parents communicated with us. And that my parents wouldn't, my dad especially, this was about, wouldn't come out and be like, so wait, are kids in your school doing heroin? But we had this, like, we developed this, like, weird method of communication where he'd be like, what percentage of kids do you think are smoking cigarettes? And if it was something that was, like, completely something I would never consider doing, let's use the example, what percentage of kids in your class are doing heroin?
Heroin.
I'd be like, oh, like 2%, Dad, almost nobody. That was like, it's never touched my life. It's not in my orbit at all. Like, that is so far away from anything you need to worry about. But then he was like, what percentage of kids in your class are like smoking cigarettes? I'd be like, that's like 60%. Like, it's pretty close to me. Like, it's all around. And it was like a funny way of discussing, like, what percentage of kids would you say in middle school are sexually active? It's like, oh, it's like 25%. Like, it's not really touching me.
You are blowing my mind. Your middle school was intense, Margaret.
No, but what I'm saying is, like, it wasn't an actual representation of what people were doing. The way that I answered the question was how I was communicating with my dad about how much it was affecting my life.
Oh, so I see. You were talking about hypothetical larger populations and maybe giving an indication about your own circle.
Correct. Like, it was all about communicating with my dad how close this was to affecting me.
Got it.
So, like, heroin, 2%. Nobody was doing it. Cigarette smoking, 50%. Like, yes, I was pretty aware of it was all around me. And it was like, I wasn't doing it. And then if I went to 90%, it was like, I'm doing it too, Dad, whatever it is. So it was like this funny method of communication where we could kind of hash out without getting into specifics, because the other big problem with specifics, and I think there's a huge role to talking this way with kids. The problem about getting into specifics is, like, are your friends juuling? If your kid says yes, then suddenly it's like, right, my mom's going to call their mom. Like, I'm ratting them out. Yep. I am narking on them, which has some negatives. As opposed to, like, do you think that girls in middle school getting pressured into sexual activity by their boyfriends, is that something you're seeing? Yeah, I see that. That's a way to have that conversation where it's not like I have to call Susie's mom and tell Susie that Derek is pressuring her into sex. And I think there's a huge role for a conversation that is not into the specifics of it.
I think you're right. I have gotten somewhere with my older kids by talking about, is this stuff that you see kids do sometimes?
I think that's such a helpful way to get into the conversation, because it kind of lets you know what's actually going on without it becoming a thing of, if you tell me anything about what is going on in your school, the principal's getting a call 30 minutes later and you're going to get, like, marched in front of everyone as, like, the big tattletale of the school.
Well, that here's the point, I think. As our kids get older, this starts to be their judgment call, right? When my kid was in middle school and friends are doing things they weren't supposed to do, and my kid was like, should I tell? Should I not? Should I disclose? My child's affinity at that time was to the peers. And again, it was like, they weren't setting fires, right? It was something that seemed maybe a little bit harmful, but just to them, and everybody in there wanted to be in there. So I guess I see that. But then as they get older and the situations get more intense, they have to look in themselves for whether to tell or not. And that gets a lot more complicated. Little kids are looking to us. Was that tattling or was that telling? Right. But was it a big deal? I squealed. And then they take this interior as they get to be teenagers. And I don't know, the stakes get higher.
Yes. I mean, exactly. And the stakes are high for us. Like, you have a friend who, you know, has an alcohol problem and is frequently in the car with her children. Do you call the police? Do you call Child Protective Services? It's a hard question. Mm-hmm. These are hard questions. They're hard all ages and stages. You know, like, what is your role in other people's lives? I think the basic rule is if it is unsafe for that person or someone else, you probably have some moral responsibility to get involved. But at the same time, there's a reason why this is hard, because, like your husband said, like, is it your child's role to tell on the kids who are juuling? I'm not sure. I think that's why this is a really hard question.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was very clear cut. And then the more I thought about it, the more I understood. I wasn't mad at my kid. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, okay, I get it. There are ramifications to being the person who stands in the gap, right? Whether you're stopping the bully or you're stopping the behavior in the hallway.
And it's predicated on the idea that, like, there is a huge spectrum of things. I think that if you know that a child in school is bringing a loaded gun to school. Obviously, that has immediate health risks for everyone involved. It's super dangerous. It is 100% black and white. Easy, right? Juuling is kind of like, there are theoretical, I'm not trying to downplay the health risks of juuling, right. But like, you get that it's not as immediate. It's not like this is going to kill them tomorrow. Like, they're probably engaging in something long-term that's a bad idea. But like, I definitely understand that as you get deeper into the spectrum, the questions get much harder.
Let's talk about this Together Against Bullying. They had some really good ideas about how to help a kid discern if they're supposed to get an adult.
Great.
And this made sense to me. They say you tell if you need an adult to help solve the problem.
And I think that's a great orientation. And mm-hmm. this is a skill that I think you can easily give your kids. One of the things I think you can talk to with kids is like, who is a mandated reporter in their school? Who they can talk to about stuff that is too big for them. I think that is something that you can pull through the ages and stages. You can be like, your guidance counselor is a person who is trained in how to help with situations that are too big for kids.
And even too big for you to tell me. I had this specific conversation with my middle schoolers that their counselor at their school, they have a lot of respect for her. I have a lot of respect for her because she teaches them about, you know, reproduction and puberty.
Oh, God bless her. Thoughts and prayers.
Yeah. And they don't like snort and roll their eyes. Like she takes them seriously. They take her seriously. I have great respect for her. And I have explicitly told my children, if there's ever something you need to tell an adult and you feel like you can't tell me, I think you should go and tell her. You should know that that's somebody that you can trust.
We have more from that list after this break. Hello, Hellions. You know we listen to a lot of podcasts that aren't our own, and today we want to tell you about a podcast that really speaks to us and will speak to any parent of a child with special education needs.
The podcast is called Understood Explains. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Ortube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs.
The latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. One of my kids has an IEP, and I found this podcast so validating and so helpful. I feel better equipped to advocate for my child's educational needs now.
This podcast is helpful for parents in many different situations, whether your child already has an IEP or you're just starting to wonder if they might need extra support in the classroom. Juliana has content for kids of all ages and for kids who are learning English as an additional language as well.
To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains.
Margaret, it's an exciting news day.
An exciting news day indeed, Amy.
A few years ago, we launched our first spinoff podcast, Toddler Purgatory, hosted by the hilarious Blair Brooks and Molly Lloyd.
And guess what? Now Blair and Molly are back with their all-new podcast, Unsticking It.
You know Blair and Molly as two busy moms and actors. And somewhere between potty training and the pandemic, they both felt like they lost their creative kaboom.
In their new podcast, Unsticking It, they are going to talk about how all of us can get back to what lights us up after motherhood. Amy, I need this.
Me too. And Blair and Molly will be talking to fellow imaginative minds. We're talking actors, artists, and creators of all kinds about how we can all unstick ourselves from whatever muck we're stuck in.
Follow, subscribe, and listen to Unsticking It wherever you get your podcasts.
That's Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks.
Okay, today, since we're talking about tattling, I thought it would be a good idea to bring in an expert on the subject, and that is why we have this 7-year-old here with us today. Say hello, 7-year-old.
Hello.
What does it mean to tattle?
It's called tattling because, like, somebody's doing something that's just a little bit wrong and it's not your business. That's tattling.
But why is it so much fun to tell grown-ups what other kids are doing wrong?
I have no idea.
You don't know? Do you sometimes do that, though?
Yeah.
Are you good at following the rules?
Yes.
Are other kids good at following the rules?
Well, maybe not all of them.
So it's kind of your role to make sure that the kids who aren't following the rules follow the rules.
Yes.
But whose job is that, really?
Mommy.
And are you the mommy of this family?
Nope.
Do other kids ever tattle on you?
My brother, especially.
Do you know who Amy is?
Sorta, not really. I saw her in the picture of your podcast. I don't know her.
She's my co-host. Maybe we're not doing a good enough job of marketing, but to the seven-year-old set. But she says we should get rid of saying the word tattling. Do you think that's a good idea?
Yes.
So you are team eliminate tattling.
Ding, ding, ding.
All right, I'll let Amy know that you're on her side of this one. Anything else you need to say about tattling?
Nope.
Goodbye, I love you.
Bye, Mommy.
Okay, we're back, and let's talk about what to do as we always turn the corner here into part three. How do we fix this?
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to get to, like, this is what to do in every single situation, because a lot of these are sticky.
That's right.
Wickets. And I think that you can talk to kids from a very young age about, like, when, I mean, Amy has abandoned the word tattling. I'm still fine with, like, tattling versus telling and making those kind of distinctions for kids.
Don't squeal unless it's a big deal.
Don't squeal unless it's a big deal. It's fine. Amy loves a rhyme. It's going to be that one. But
I do love rhyme.
I think finding someone in our helpful tips episode, a bunch of people who I think were all from the South were like, surprises are okay, but no secrets. Like, really helping your kids develop a language around, like, surprising your brother for his birthday is a surprise. Not telling when something bad is happening is a secret, and like making those distinctions. And I think keeping that out of families. I read a long time ago an article about, it's an oldie loxler. Uh-oh.
Back in my day.
But it's still, I think, is Snuffleupagus still on this Sesame Street?
Snuffleupagus is still on Sesame Street, but everybody can see him now.
So it used to be that when we were growing up, Snuffleupagus was an elephant, like a woolly mammoth kind of elephant, right?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. He was Big Bird's imaginary friend. I can't believe we didn't talk about Snuffleupagus.
He was Big Bird's imaginary friend. But he was only Big Bird could see him, and he would tell people about him all the time. And then nobody would believe Big Bird when he talked about this giant woolly mammoth friend of his. And at a certain point, people kind of wrote in or whatever happened, and people kind of said to Sesame Street, like, this runner where Big Bird has something that he's telling people that people don't believe is not a good message for kids. And so there was a whole episode where, like, Big Bird introduced Snuffleupagus and everybody got to see him. And it was like, oh, this thing you've been saying is true.
Yeah, I remember that episode.
And it was like an interesting developmental thing of like, oh, maybe underscoring to kids that nobody will believe if they tell them something is not a good idea. And so they made this adjustment, which was really nice. But I think making a distinction with your kids, and it's something that happens sometimes with grandparents, in-laws, don't tell your mom that I fed you these three donuts. Like, encourage people not to have secretive stuff with your kids. Like, open communication is kind of the goal.
Amy Morin in her Very Well Family article had a helpful sort of thing around secrets that I had never heard before that was useful. Good secrets you can teach your kids have an expiration date. Like, we're not going to tell about this special Christmas gift for grandpa, or we're going to have a surprise party for your brother and we're not going to tell.
That's a great way to think of it.
They have expiration dates. You only have to keep the secret till the end of the day or the end of the week. And my oldest kid knew what my youngest baby was going to be. This is a long story, but I'll just say, like, I knew what we were having. I didn't want to. The nurse told me by accident. My husband and I had already decided we weren't going to find out. And so my husband didn't want to know. So I knew that my youngest was a girl and my husband had no idea. And my son, who was 4 at the time, found some pink baby clothes that I had hidden in the closet. And I said, hey, you can't tell. This is a secret. Daddy really doesn't want to know. And I remember so clearly him strutting into the hospital room and me holding baby Maggie. And we said, she's here, meet your baby sister. And he said, I never told. Yeah. And it was so hard for him.
I think it's just reinforcing the language around this all the time is just helpful in terms of like we talk about, you don't shoot at someone in a game who doesn't have a gun. You don't play rough with someone who is not fundamentally consenting to rough play. Like, you have conversations around a lot of issues that are really about, hopefully later, okay, we don't do anything with people who are not consenting to what we want. And I think these secrets and these kind of conversations are the same too. Like, we can talk really generally about what's going on in your life without naming specific people. So we can kind of be discussing these things. One of the things that Christy brought up, which I would have never thought about, is like, what if your daughter, I say daughter because I'm so gendered about it. What if your child has a friend who is engaging in really unhealthy eating, like not eating for a couple of days to stay thin? Is that a secret that involves your daughter?
Right.
Is that something that should involve you?
That's a tough one, but it occurs to me that maybe, you know, we've talked a lot about how our kids sort of offload their uncomfortable emotions onto us by taking things out on us. And this is a case where we should encourage them. Like, if there's something you don't feel right about, you can tell me and I'll help you figure out what to do about it. You know, maybe we have to make it sort of clearer to our older kids that they can talk things through with us and we'll help them figure out what to do and we'll figure out together what the right course of action is. But it isn't you have a loyalty.
And I think we have to acknowledge as high resource parents who have a lot of education on this stuff. If you're listening to this podcast, you're a high resource parent. You're a person who is seeking out information on how to be the best parent to your child. You're reading articles about, you know, how to deal with eating disorders and stuff. As a high resource parent, you have to realize that your kids may have peers who do not have high resource parents, who are not able to be there in the same way. And like your child may be the person they're coming to for resource. And that's a big burden on your child, but like you can help them navigate it. And it isn't all roads lead towards like the minute you tell me about that Susie's skipping meals, like I'm calling 8 counselors in and we're having her like arrested and carting off to eating disorder jail. Like that's not the only thing that's going to happen. I may just help feed you resources. You know, there are solutions to this that don't necessarily involve like the catastrophe that you're thinking of.
There's a specific here, it occurs to me, like when your kid walked in and said, I have to tell you something, but I don't know if I should, you know, and you're like, ding, 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 that when a kid says to another kid, I have to tell you something, but you have to promise you won't tell anyone, that that's probably something where they're going to have to tell someone. And just because the kid is saying that doesn't necessarily mean that they mean it. And
you mean they're telling you because they want you to tell someone?
They're telling you because they need help. Yeah. And if you're like, I don't know what to do with this disclosure I just received, then you probably need an adult to help resolve it. And you're not betraying your friend who has confided in you because your friend needs help. Your friend's asking you for help. And if you don't know how to help, then it's okay to go to a grown-up, even if your friend has said, please don't tell a grown-up.
Yeah. And I think talking about this, I talk sometimes about it. I remember my mom talking to us about it in certain ways of like literally like baggage. Like we now use the word baggage as kind of a punchline, but like they're handing you something that's too heavy for you to carry by yourself.
Right.
Like think about it that way. Like it's they're carrying something that's too heavy for them and they're asking you to share carrying it. And now it's too heavy for both of you. You need a grown up to come and help you like carry this thing because it's too heavy for you guys. You can't carry it.
So that's something specific. That's something separate you can talk about with your kids. That's different from kids who are juuling in the bathroom and nobody wants an adult to know about that being confided in by a friend about a big problem and how they handle that. It's probably something we should talk about with our kids before they're put in that situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, I think this is the role of like the family table, which we come back to pretty much in so many episodes, which is like dinner as a family is about talking about what's going on in the news, what's going on in your days, what's going on in the world. And like, we had so many conversations around our family table about like moral dilemmas. There used to be, this is a super old Elox alert. We're really piling them up in this episode.
You are
bringing
them.
There used to be a game called Scruples. Do you remember this? A board
sure.
game?
Back in my day.
It was like the hip board game of like the early 80s? No, late eight. No, it's late 80s. Yeah.
Okay.
But it was a board game and it was basically like moral dilemma questions. Basically, like you're at a store and you found out your friend stole a can of soda once you get outside. Like, what do you do? It was like you would have these family discussions about these scruples issues. And our family nerded out on scruples. We loved scruples. My dad was a lawyer. My brother turned out to be a lawyer. Like they could debate the scruples cards for hours at a time. Like why this was entertaining, I don't really know. But I think facilitating general discussions about like, what is our family morality? Like, what do we believe in? How do we want to help other people? Like, yes, generically, like you want to be a good person. But what does that actually mean? Like having those conversations and then having a lot of conversations about stuff that you're not sure your kids are ready to talk about yet, probably helpful.
Yes.
Why do people start eating in a disordered way? What is that about? What is sex? What are the mechanics of it? How does it work? I feel like I kind of squirrel around some of these issues sometimes, but I've started really diving in. Like every time it comes up, we were in the city the other day. In fact, we were right by your apartment, Amy, but you weren't home. We were driving right by and it was like Museum of Sex on a bus. And yep. My kid was like, what is that I about? He freaked out my 10-year-old. And I was like, it's probably a museum where they talk about different sex stuff. And I'm like, I'm diving in. It came up and I'm taking it as an opening. And he was like,
right. It's on the bus shelter. You have no choice.
Basically ready to like roll out of the minivan and go seek shelter, probably in your place. But like, I was like, sorry, you brought it up. And like my sister-in-law has a joke with like her teenagers that when they were in like sophomore and junior year, every time they got in the car, she'd be like, is it sex or college? What are we talking about? But it's like, you know, you kind of got to attack these things head on and not shy away because your kids are going to get confronted with this stuff so much earlier than you think they are.
And when you're confronted with a story, as often happens at home, about a kid got in trouble at school or a kid got kicked out or I heard about this other thing, I have tried with my older kids as the infractions get more serious, right? To not overreact, to underreact, and show my interest in the topic.
Show my interest in the topic. Tell me more about this electronic cigarette.
One of my kids knows a kid who got in trouble for burglarizing a store. And this is a child that I had known a few years prior, like missing a tooth at the spring concert. It was unthinkable to me. And I hear about it. I say to my kid, did you hear about this? And of course, my other two children are like, yeah, like everybody knows about that. I'm like, oh, yeah. And I tried to get past the like, why didn't anybody tell me? And tried to calmly discuss the details of it and also discuss why this might have happened and how everybody deserves a chance at redemption. Like, well, inside my head, I was like, what? But
also, don't layer too much on this. So I was just talking to Amy before we started recording. Our cat's been missing for 5 days. Poor Avril, guys. She was missing. And this morning we woke up, we were getting breakfast. And I mean, it's been 3 days of the kids crying every day. Where is Avril? Do you think she got killed? Do you think she... And I was trying because I didn't think she was coming back at a certain point. I was like, well, you know, sometimes they meet a mate and decide to go live a happier life with that person somewhere. Like I was totally starting to seed the like, she went to live on a farm in the woods with a happy mate. So anyway, we got up this morning about whatever, 7 o'clock, made breakfast. At 8 o'clock, my son was like, oh, Avril came home. By the way.
I was like, by the way.
What? Like, we have for 5 days been like weeping and gnashing our teeth about our missing cat. And like all three kids saw her this morning and no one told us for an hour. Like you have to remember that kids just are very self-oriented. They're not necessarily keeping the jeweling from you. I mean, they probably are to some degree because it's secret, but like you also can't overestimate. I had a kid who came home every day for a year. How was school? It's fine. What happened? Nothing. We're fine. Fine, nothing. Every day for a year. And then someone was like, I saw his teacher at some point. She was on crutches. Oh my God, what happened? Oh, didn't he tell you? I fell in the classroom and broke my leg. And the ambulance people had to come in the classroom, cart me off and bring me to the hospital. And I was like, no, never mentioned it. She said, it's really funny. Like most of the boy moms told me that the boys never mentioned it.
And the girls were like, wait until you hear this.
Right. The girls were like, dunk, 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 news report from the fourth grade classroom. So you don't have to layer onto this whole thing of like, I'm not a trusted parent. They're not telling me every single thing that happens. Maybe it's just like, I was busy playing, you know, Fortnite, and I didn't mention that our cat who's been missing for 5 days came back home. Like, because I'm in my own world because I'm crazy and I'm a child.
You're right. Right. Sometimes the things that we think are huge deals, like our kids aren't agitating about, if it isn't actually somebody being injured or hurt by another kid, if they can't put themselves in that situation. My child was like, I'm not dueling. That seems dumb to me. My child was spending zero time worrying about the health and safety of those kids.
Right. It wasn't the center of their life. And right, it maybe wouldn't even occur to him. And I think you've got to keep your ego out of this. And like, a lot of us identify as like, I am the type of special parent whose kids would tell them anything. And it's such an important part of my parental role that I am an open book and my children trust me. You got to get that out of this story. And just trying to be like, I am facilitating the flow of information back and forth. I love my dad's percentage way of talking to kids. I think it's so smart. Like, hey, what percentage of people are jeweling in your school, do you think? If they say 50, it's like, oh, okay, I got to keep my eye on that jeweling thing. That's going along. If you say what percentage are, you know, shooting heroin into their necks in the classroom, they're going to be like, nobody's doing that. That's ridiculous. Okay, fine. Like, just have conversations where you're constantly kind of gauging, like, what's going on? Do you hear a lot of people in your school being pressured around sex stuff? I would ask that question at the dinner table. Do you see a lot of girls worrying about what they're eating and how it's affecting their bodies? Do you see, it doesn't have to be girls, but like I do, I frankly worry about it more with my daughter than my sons, but maybe that's crazy. Do you see kids talking about this kind of stuff? You know, I mean, we all went to schools where like there was like a creepy teacher disappearing in the bathroom with kids and nobody was talking about that. Like, you're not going to get a constant good exact report on everything that's going on, but you've got to facilitate the information coming in. And then if your kid is not reporting on something, I mean, spend a little time on what they're not reporting, but like move on to like, how am I the adult helping you with this problem? Like Amy says, you don't overreact to the thing of like, what? Why didn't you tell me?
And when your kids are little, I think focus less on teaching them that telling on their friends is bad and focus more on, it's hard to know when you should tell and when you shouldn't. Let's talk about that, like, and go through these hypotheticals with your kid who's prone to tattling, squealing, whatever you want to call it, and help that kid understand the difference between surprises and secrets and good telling and bad telling, rather than castigate them for telling.
And also, like, when you're in charge and when you're not in charge, because I think that's part of this too. Like, hey, you're not in charge of this. We have a famous story in our family of my nephew, who is this kid to just his every fiber of his being. And we were having a family barbecue. And at some point he was walking around, he was like 6 years old, and he was bringing plates over to the adults and being like, why was this person excused? There's still corn on this plate. I thought we were supposed to eat our corn. Like, he was inspecting the plates to wonder why people had been excused. And it was so stinking cute. But it's also like, you're not in charge now, 6 year old. And you're not in charge when someone brings you something heavy when you're 16 either. We're in charge. We've got this. Like, it's part of the same story, I think. Don't worry about being in charge. Let us help you. We've got it. We'll take care of kids who didn't eat their vegetables, and we will also take care of it when someone brings you something too heavy to carry.
Well said.
Amy, I think we solved it, although solve is probably not the right word for this one, but I feel like we made a lot of progress today.
We figured out that it's all gray areas, and here are some good parameters to put around it and help your kids talk about it.
Huge shout out to my sister-in-law, Christy, for bringing this up. And while we're doing shout outs, Amy, we have a shout out today.
Yeah.
We're reserving some time, moving on from things you shouldn't tell or should tell. We're going to tell you about the Mom Hour podcast, guys.
A lot of you probably already listened to the Mom Hour. Sarah Powers and Megan Francis are good friends of ours. They've been doing this for even longer than we have. They have a great parenting podcast that comes out every week. They also have episodes called More Than Mom, where they talk about like what books they really liked recently and just sort of conversation about non-parenting topics, which I really enjoy. They are so thoughtful as parents. They're very funny. They've got a great Amy Margaret chemistry, wouldn't you say?
I agree. We even know which one's the Amy and which one's the Margaret.
But anyway, we love them, and you guys should definitely check them out where you get your podcasts.
Yeah, a lot of you found us through them, and we want whoever's not listening to them to make sure to check them out. The Mom Hour podcast, guys.
Okay, and you guys know where you can find us. You can find links to the research and the stuff we talked about this week on our website, whatfreshhellpodcast.com.
You can find us on Twitter at WFHpodcast.
You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at whatfreshhellcast.
And you can always come to our website, whatfreshhellpodcast.com, for all things What Fresh Hell Podcast. Do it. Okay, guys. Great talk this week, Amy. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, this was a good one. I learned something.
And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
If you're a parent, I invite you to join us at the Mindful Mama podcast, where it's all about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. with sometimes hilarious and always thought-provoking experts and friends. At Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and I can't wait to see you there. Listen in to the Mindful Mama podcast.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.